happy to hear argument in our second case. Maybe you just be sure and identify yourself and for whom you, who you represent when you begin to talk.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Erin Trodden, representing Angel Vasquez Flores, the defendant in this case. In this case, we agree with the government on many points. The government conceded that Mr. Vasquez Flores has met or is excused from meeting the first two requirements of a collateral attack under 8 U.S.C. 1326d regarding exhaustion of administrative remedies and judicial review, because the immigration judge in his removal hearing never advised him of his right to appeal the IJ's decision.
Tell us what you disagree with the government about.
We disagree with the government as to prejudice, Your Honor. The government contends that Mr. Vasquez Flores was not prejudiced, and in fact, he was prejudiced by the immigration judge's errors. The denial of his right to appeal prejudiced him because had he been able to appeal, the outcome of this case would have been different. And he's shown a reasonable probability that he would have been eligible for voluntary departure.
But did he have the means to depart?
Your Honor, he testified at the hearing that he did have resources available. The beginning of the hearing, the court will have noted that the immigration judge, after going back and forth regarding removability, ordered him to pay a $5,000 bond. And he said, it will have to be less, I don't have any money here. And the immigration judge then said, it's not going to be less. Can you pay for your ticket? He didn't even ask him if he could pay. He asked if his girlfriend or someone else could pay for a ticket. And after a long pause, he said no. Later on, he again asked if the bond could be lowered. And the immigration judge said, it's not going to be lower. And in fact, now that I've ordered you deported, you don't have a bond at all.
So yes, but does he ever represent that he had the means to depart if the bond was lowered? Does he ever represent that?
He never does. He was never given the opportunity to.
Well,
that condition was never presented to him. He asked for the bond to be lowered, and the immigration judge told him, it's not going to be lower. Now, can someone pay for a ticket for you? Now, the way a reasonable person would interpret that would be to mean, you'll have to pay $5,000. Now, can you also pay for a ticket? The question of,
well, maybe that's the way you interpret it, but I'm not so sure that's necessarily the way that a reasonable person would respond. You might say, look, I can come up with X amount, and I can depart for that reason, on that amount.
Your Honor, I think let me unpack that question, because I think there's several issues going on there. He never understood, I don't think, what exactly was being asked or why this was important. And I think this gets to the immigration judge's duty to develop the record as it relates to him. So the immigration judge never explained to him how voluntary departure works, including that he would have a period of time to depart, that he wouldn't have to pay for his ticket within 24 hours or the next week, but that he could have up to 60 days to depart.
All of this would turn on how we would view the term reasonable probability. I know we talked about it in this court in United States versus Wilson, but I don't think we've ever fully articulated what that term means. What is your definition in terms of how this court has the decision that got us to the definition of what we mean by reasonable probability?
Thank you, Your Honor. Reasonable probability has to mean something less than a certainty, for sure, and it has to mean something less than clear and convincing evidence. So we start with that. The government argued clear and convincing evidence, but that's the standard that he would have had to show in immigration court.
Where's your case law? What cases are you looking at that guide you on that?
So I'm looking particularly at El Shami, which is this court's decision where the court found that the defendant was prejudiced. In El Shami, the court looked at, found that there was a reasonable probability that but for the immigration judge's errors, he would not have been removed. And the court looked at the positive and the negative factors and basically said, yeah, it's some positive factors. He had, this is the balancing test that the immigration judge would be required to perform. He has some positive factors. He has a family in this country. He has a small business. He has been here a long time. But he has some significant negative factors, too. He had two serious felony convictions. The court looked at that and found that under those circumstances, he had showed a reasonable probability. I think we can deduce from that this is not a high burden. The cases where courts have found that there wasn't a reasonable probability are cases where very clearly the alien would not have been eligible.
Can you speak up a little bit? It seems like your voice is fading. Somewhere in there, you faded on us.
I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Okay. So I was saying that the given El Shami's balancing of those factors and basically saying there are some positive factors, but there are some negative factors as well. This is not a particularly high burden. The counter example would be a case like Lopez Collazo, which is another decision of this court, where the court determined that the defendant had not shown a reasonable probability of success because he was plainly ineligible for the relief he was seeking. Basically, even though he had showed a due process violation, he was still an aggravated felon, and he just plainly, under those circumstances, he had not showed a reasonable probability. Here we have a situation where Mr. Vasquez Flores, there's no dispute that he qualifies under almost all of the factors for voluntary departure. The only real issue is whether or not he had the means to depart on his own. And his testimony is that he does have means, he does have some funds. Now, the problem is the immigration judge never pursued that. The immigration judge never asked him the obvious follow-up question, what do you have? And the immigration judge also erroneously conditioned his ability to depart voluntarily on his ability to pay this departure bond, which under the matter of MAS decision, which was submitted in the 28J letter, would have been incorrect. The requirement—
I'm sorry, I can't hear you again. I don't know if the microphone is closed or what the story is.
I'll lean in as much as I can, Your Honor, I apologize. The matter of MAS decision, which was submitted as the 28J letter, noted that when an alien is granted voluntary departure under safeguards, there is no requirement for a bond to be posted at all. So the immigration judge's decision here to condition the bond on to condition the grant of voluntary departure on posting a departure bond was error. Had he been able to appeal, the BIA would have recognized that and the case would have been remanded. Now we get to the difference here. He only has to show, as Judge Wynn noted, a reasonable probability of success. So he showed that he's otherwise eligible. He showed that he has funds. Under those circumstances, he shows a reasonable probability of success. The difficulty is—
But I want to be clear, it's not so much me noting it, I'm simply going on a case law from United States versus Wilson that seems to be some that we've kind of gone with that standard for these 1326D claims. What I was trying to ask you was, in terms of articulate, maybe flesh out, what does that term actually mean when we're trying to determine prejudice and where do we look I know that case cited a Fifth Circuit case as a basis for it. And you know, that's because to me, that's fundamental to know what that term means, or at least to help us to define it, can help us to at least, I think, make a decision in this case, one way or the other.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the Wilson case, I think, and I'm not aware of any cases in the Fourth Circuit that have specifically defined reasonable probability, but I will note that cases in other circuits, and I'm thinking of the Ninth Circuit in particular, have recognized that a reasonable probability requires at least some evidence. And I don't recall which of the Ninth Circuit cases cited in the briefing said this, but it was discussed that at least some evidence was required. So if reasonable probability means some evidence, then we get there. Certainly he has showed some evidence. Reasonable probability, I don't think, requires, though, that he show to this court what he would have had to show to the immigration court.
But does it require that he make some sort of representation? You keep saying he's established all of these things. And if you have just if you have a statute and you have four elements to establish, if you establish three, you haven't established a reasonable probability that you have complied with the statute, have you? No, because the fourth one's missing. That's what we're trying to tease out from you.
Yes, Your Honor. And with respect to that, what we have in the record is his statement to the immigration judge that he had some resources. So he said the bond would have to be less. We don't know, you know, he did not say that he could pay $500 or $1,000 or $2,500. The immigration judge also didn't ask him that. And when he tried to offer that he could pay less, the immigration judge said, it's not going to be less. But given that statement twice that he could pay something, I think he has shown at least that he has the resources. He's shown a reasonable probability that he had the resources to depart voluntarily, and that's all he needs to show. Had the immigration judge developed the record, then the issue would have been different. And the immigration judge's duty to develop the record in this case is, I want to be clear, goes to the prejudice aspect of the case for him. But with respect to the questions that the court previously asked in the prior case, our position is that an immigration judge duty to develop the record is one that springs from due process.
Ms. Trident, let me ask you this question. How long was this hearing?
7.5 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay.
7.5 minute hearing. So if you compare this hearing to the hearing in the prior case, the immigration judge did substantially less in this case than he did in the prior case. He never explained to Mr. Vasquez Flores what the charges against him were. He never explained to him what relief he was eligible for. He never asked the follow-up questions that would have made it clear in the immigration court what his ability to depart was, separate from the question of his ability to pay the bond. Certainly, due process requires that an alien has a right to a fair hearing, and part of that requirement of a right to a fair hearing is the ability to understand and be able to respond accurately. It's very difficult for an alien to respond, or for anyone unversed in the process, to be able to respond to these questions when they're not being given enough information to know what's really being asked. And I think the prime example of that is the question regarding, can your girlfriend or your wife or someone pay, can your girlfriend or anybody else pay for your ticket? And the immigration judge never asks them or never clarifies what the time frame for that is. It would be as if the court were to ask me, can you give me $20? Well, if the question means today, no, I can't. But if the question means tomorrow, probably. It's the time frame matters and the details matter, and these issues were never explained. So this has to be a part of any duty to develop the record, as we've set forth in the briefing. In addition, so for these reasons, Mr. Vasquez-Flores has showed sufficiently that he was prejudiced by the immigration judge's errors in this case. I see that my time is up. Are there any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Jean Hudson for the United States.
Good morning, counsel.
Thank you. Good morning. This court should affirm the district court's decision, which correctly found that Vasquez-Flores could not establish prejudice under the fundamental unfairness test for related to 1326D. The district court got this right, and the decision should be affirmed. In this case, the immigration judge asked Mr. Vasquez-Flores, as counsel for has just described, asked Mr. Vasquez-Flores if he could pay, or if anyone could pay, the $5,000 bond. Vasquez-Flores asked if it could be less. The judge said it would not be less. He asked if anyone, and his girlfriend or anyone else, could pay for a ticket back to Honduras for him. Vasquez-Flores said no. And at the end of the hearing, the immigration judge, in response to Vasquez-Flores' statement that he could pay a lower bail, said it was not going to be lower. Vasquez-Flores' own statements make clear that he understood exactly what was going on here, that he engaged the IJ with relevant questions about what the bond amount might be, and was, in his own words, unable to pay his way home. He had no means to depart. The IJ developed those facts necessary to make that decision, and the IJ determined that Vasquez-Flores could not pay the $5,000 bond, and Vasquez-Flores cannot meet his burden applicable to this case.
Yes, Hudson, let me ask you this. I want to make sure that, do you agree that in discretionary decisions like voluntary departure, that a person could be prejudiced by a decision? Or do you say that there's no prejudice in a discretionary decision?
The alien has no constitutional interest in the voluntary departure. It's discretionary relief. And therefore, our position is that there can be no denial here that rises to a constitutional level, if that is what the court is asking.
No, my question was, I just want to make sure that that you're not taking the position that in discretionary decisions that an alien can never show prejudice. That's not your argument, is it?
No, the alien, however, would have to show, I think, something that rendered the hearing something where he was unable to have a meaningful opportunity to be heard. I think that would be where the alien would have to get. And Mr. Vasquez-Flores cannot reach that burden here.
Let me ask you, you mentioned because it's critical in terms of the discussion that went on during that 7.5 minutes. Did the, at least I don't see it where the defendant was, or the petitioner was ever informed what was the nature of the departure and how, what the difference would be if he left voluntarily as opposed to involuntarily. In other words, to be able to at least articulate that if the reason I'm asking, can you go back, is because if you do this, then this is what's happened. If you can't, then that happens. If one is standing before a judge and it doesn't seem to make a big difference whether or not you leave voluntarily or involuntarily, then there seems not to be an incentive to do anything like pay your own ticket to go back or say, I'm leaving there. Why wouldn't the judge explain that Well, you know, because he could have had the money for all we know, but he just said, why should I spend money to go back if you're going to send me back? Wouldn't it be fundamental to at least understand the difference between a voluntary and an involuntary departure?
I don't think that Mr. Vasquez Flores can point to any regulation or any statute that requires the immigration judge to make those kinds of or to have that kind of discussion with the alien. And
Now, maybe not a statute. You're right. It's not a mandated duty by statute. But we're talking about if we're looking at the prejudice prong, we go back to United States versus Wilson here, which talks about reasonable probability, which then that case itself discussed the Fifth Circuit's case. And the Fifth Circuit case, it didn't just discuss, it actually adopted the standard from the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit's case actually looked at the Strickland standard for there, which, your opposing counsel seemed to point us more to the Ninth Circuit direction with plausibility, but it's really the reasonable probability standard that we're looking at, which I think is somewhat higher than plausibility. So how do you, I mean, when you're dealing with that outside the statutory requirement, if you're dealing even from a due process perspective, that you've got someone standing before you and you don't explain to them the difference, why are you asking them this? Are you able to leave on your own? Do you have enough money? And then he inquires, well, you know, can you reduce it? Now that statement in of itself seems to indicate he's got some money. If he wants it reduced, he probably has some resource, because otherwise you wouldn't ask reduce. And yet there's no inquiry on it from the judge. And then the other thing too is the judge never tells him that, you know, this bond money would be returned upon his proof of departure. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know what a bond is. A bond is what? When do you get it? Do you ever get it back? If you get 5,000, if you know you can get 5,000, you might could get someone to give you 5,000 if you knew, all right, when he's on that plane leaving, you get your money back. That's a different, don't you think there's some need to at least explain that? He took 7.5 minutes. Why did he take a few more minutes and just kind of explain this? Otherwise, we're in these kind of cases, and if we do it the way this judge did, you just go in and ask the bare bone questions. Says, I'm not obligated to say a word to you on why I'm asking these questions. Okay, send them home.
I'm not sure exactly what the question is, but if I can start with
let me back up because I did say a lot, so I want to make sure you are sure the question I'm asking. The question I'm asking is, outside of a statutory obligation, which you seem to point to, why is that not a due process obligation to tell a petitioner what you mean by a voluntary departure? That unlike an order of removal, you've got a question here that you ought to explain to him why you're doing this. Why wouldn't you do that? And why is that not critical for the IJ to explain?
Well, as we set forth in our brief, there is no due process right to discretionary relief, and this court has held that there's no due process right to discretionary relief. This court has held that even the erroneous denial of voluntary or of discretionary relief does not trigger due process protections, and therefore there is no due process concern in the circumstances the court has set forth.
So then your answer to Judge Floyd's question is yes. You cannot have discretionary, if you've got discretionary relief, you can't have a constitutional right. That your answer is yes, right? Because you just answered and said no, you didn't mean that, but it seems like to me you're telling me because it's discretionary, therefore you can't have due process rights violated.
Yet there is no due process right triggered here, as we said in our brief. The IJ does not have a constitutional obligation to develop the record in this case, is our position. There is no due process triggered by a duty to develop the record in this case. So if I've said something that was contrary to that before,
Well, I just want to make sure, I think when you're talking constitution, a discretionary right is different than a right to a fair hearing, which really is fundamental in due process rights. So, I mean, I'm not trying to argue over you, but I want to make sure you explain yourself clearly. No need for me to hear you incorrectly and go back and decide a case without giving you a chance to explain what you mean. So, you know, take your time, and, you know, if you know, there's something you kind of want to clarify to me, go ahead and do that.
Well, I think maybe I'll start with our position that the immigration judge, regarding any duty to develop the record, the immigration judge has certainly broad statutory and regulatory authority to develop the record. But there is no statute or regulation that the government is aware of that would impose any obligation on the IJ to develop the record in a voluntary removal hearing. To the extent that there is any duty to develop the record where the alien is unrepresented, it is not, in the government's view, a constitutional duty. And in this particular case, to the extent that there is any duty that the court might find, the IJ did fulfill that duty. The judge had before it two questions to answer. One was whether or not Vasquez Flores had the means to depart, and the second was whether the court would, whether he could pay for any bond that the court had the discretion to impose under the regulation governing these proceedings. The court.
So that you know where kind of where I'm going, and I accept what you're saying and where you're going with this, but I want to be clear because other circuits have addressed this difference between a discretionary right is different than a right to a fair hearing, where such relief is being explained. In other words, you get you're entitled to a fair hearing where the relief and what you are doing is being explained to you. And here, what I'm honing in on is you've got a judge asking about voluntary departure without any context of explaining what that means to him, other than you just can't leave voluntarily. You don't have the money. Okay, you're gone. And if that's the, you know, because you don't have a duty from your perspective, statutory duty, but I'm not talking about discretionary duty. I'm talking about the fair hearing for what you're entitled to, or to have the relief to be explained. You see what's wrong with that? And if you, you know, you take it from there.
Well, I think in this context, Mr. Vasquez Flores, in order to prevail, would have to show prejudice, which he can't show here. And I think the crux of this case, in terms of the facts that were developed at the immigration hearing, were that once the judge decided in his discretion to set that $5,000 bond, and once it was clear that Vasquez Flores couldn't pay that bond, it was clear that it was going nowhere. There were two lines of inquiry. The judge did ask about his means to depart.
See, that's the question I'm asking. It is clear at that point he can't pay it, but he doesn't know the context of it. It's a $5,000 bond. It's one thing to get $5,000, give it to someone, and never see it again. It's another thing if you say, well, let me explain to you. $5,000, I don't know where you get it from, but upon the time you leave, the $5,000 is given back. Wouldn't that be, don't you think? I mean, doesn't that sound like something somebody ought to know? If they want to say, no, I don't have the money, he has some money. We can assume that because he wants a reduced bond. I don't know what amount that was. It could have been almost nothing. It could have been close. Could have been $4,000. I don't know. But he had this, he's in this situation. If he understands the criticality of voluntary versus involuntary departure, that question is, wouldn't it be fair to explain that to him? And not explaining it creates a prejudice to him because he can't act on it.
I don't think Vasquez Flores has established prejudice here. It was his burden in this context at the hearing to establish by clear and convincing evidence, and he hasn't done that. Mr. Vasquez Flores had the opportunity, he was given notice and an opportunity, a meaningful opportunity to be heard. The IJ was under no obligation to act as an advocate for Vasquez Flores in this case. And as the district court found, the evidence was not clear and convincing that he had the means to depart. In fact, the majority of the evidence was that he had no means
What is this 60 days that you can get to fly? Is there such a thing as that in a hearing of this sort? Would he have, when you say, can you fly home, does he have to fly home tomorrow? Or is there a provision to allow him some time period in which to do it?
I believe there is something in the regulation, Your Honor. I'm not finding it right off the bat, but there may be a period of time. I think there's a limit on the period of time that the alien has to depart, but I'm not sure it's in the post-conclusion voluntary
departure. So judge didn't tell him about that. I think that limit is 60 days. Didn't tell him about that. Didn't mention that he could be held in detention during this time. I'm just trying to understand, you know, as we do these things, we all want to get through our cases. Just like this argument, we want to move through it, move on. I mean, that's just the nature of what we do. But, you know, it takes a little patience, take a little time to develop it. And I don't know if we want to create a culture with the IJ from a case like this to say, well, you just have to go in and answer these little, this here is going to take you 10 minutes because this guy here, he's not going to be able to answer these questions. He doesn't have the money. He can't pay his own ticket back. Boom, gone. Without explaining anything else. That doesn't sound fair. But I'm sorry, Judge, go ahead, please.
No. I was just going to ask you talked about he had notice and an opportunity to be heard. What did the notice say?
Pardon me, what did the notice what? I didn't hear.
Say, what did was he told in the notice?
I think the notice simply told him to appear before the immigration court on a certain date.
And he didn't know why?
I don't know what he knew, but it was just a standard notice.
Okay, I apologize. He wasn't told why?
I think it certainly said for purposes of a hearing before the immigration judge. I'd have to...
I think what this is what I'm getting at. I think Judge Wynn has made a really pretty persuasive to me case. But the way I read this record of the hearing, it didn't seem to me that he didn't know what a bond was for or what the consequences would be or any of that. So that's why I was wondering, was he told in some notice? And you brought up the notice idea.
Well, the notice says that the Department of Homeland Security has alleged that you are not a citizen or national of the United States. You're a native of Honduras and a citizen of Honduras. You arrived in the United States at or near unknown on an unknown date, and you were not then admitted or paroled after inspection by an immigration officer. And then it says, on the basis of the foregoing, it is charged that you were subject to removal from the United States pursuant to the following provisions of law. And it cites to the 212C provisions, and then it says that he is to appear on a date to be set at a time to be set and so forth. That's at JA-52.
So it doesn't tell him anything about bond or means necessary or any of that. Is that right?
Well, then there's a... second page that instructs him that he, if he chooses, he can be represented, that at the time of the hearing, he should bring any affidavits or other documents which he desires to be considered in connection with his case. And at the hearing, he would be given the opportunity to admit or deny any of the allegations in the notice of appear, and that you are inadmissible or removable on the charges contained in the notice to appear. And then at the conclusion, he would have a right to appeal an adverse decision by the immigration judge and would be advised by the immigration judge of any relief from removal for which you may appear eligible including the privilege of departure voluntarily.
So he is told at least that there are these two things. He's not told what the consequences are.
Right.
Between departure.
Right. And he's given an opportunity to have counsel. And again, the judge's decision in this context of discretionary relief, voluntary departure, is looking at the regulation governing these proceedings and has the question before him of whether or not Vasquez Flores can has the means to depart, which is required for post-conclusion voluntary departure. And then in the court's discretion, of course, he can set a bond, and the court did that. So in our view, there wasn't anything further left to develop in the record once the court determined that Vasquez Flores could not meet those two conditions. There was nothing else to determine. Now, whether or not Vasquez Flores had X amount of dollars or could access certain amount of dollars within a certain period of time might have been something somebody wanted to know under some other circumstance. But here, where the court had established the two things that were relevant under the statute, and were in fact the decisions this IJ had to make, once those facts were developed, there was no need to go any further. So for us, it's Vasquez Flores's own words. And in fact, in the context where Vasquez Flores clearly understood what was going on in response to Judge Wynn's fairness concern, where he's asked for a lower bail, he understands the court is setting a bail and has asked the judge to consider setting something less. The judge explicitly declined to do so. And again, our view is that this hearing, the issue wasn't going any further then, and Vasquez Flores cannot show that on appeal the result would have been any different.
Let's see, I think your time has expired. Thank you very much for your argument. Do we have any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Just briefly, first of all, the notice that the government was describing at J52 and 53 is in English. Mr. Vasquez Flores speaks Spanish. There's no indication that that notice was ever actually translated for him into Spanish. At the bottom of it, it says—
How was the hearing conducted? In what language?
It was conducted with an interpreter. It was conducted in English with a Spanish interpreter.
It does seem that he understands why he's there. He may not understand the difference between voluntary departure and being removed, but it does seem to understand. I thought the government's last argument was, look, what you've been trying to say is that there is a reasonable possibility that things would have been different if he'd come up with they had probed if there was some amount of money he could come up with. But the IJ did say, I'm not changing anything. So it looks like maybe that's not reasonable, but it does sort of close the door on a reasonable possibility of a change.
It doesn't close the door on a reasonable possibility of a change on appeal, however. And that's why the due process violation here he is prejudiced by. He's denied the opportunity to appeal. Had he been able to appeal, the BIA would have looked at the IJ's decision and would have found numerous problems with it.
Okay, so what is the due process violation?
The due process violation and the violation that we have argued and that the government has conceded in their response brief is the denial of his right to appeal.
That's too broad for me. What denied him his rights to appeal?
The immigration judge never advised
him. I mean, he's here, right?
The immigration judge never advised him of his right to appeal. The immigration judge circled the word waived on the written memorandum of his order, memorializing the oral decision, but never in the 7.5-minute immigration hearing was he ever advised regarding his right to appeal, asked if he wanted to appeal, or provided any opportunity to file an appeal.
Okay, and so is that the only due process violation?
That's the due process violation we're relying on. Now, we've been discussing the due process violation that comes from the immigration judge's failure to develop the record.
But you don't make that claim. That's not your claim.
That goes to prejudice in this case. And so for our purposes here, although we believe that he has a due process right, but regardless of whether it's a due process right to the development of the record or simply a right under regulation or statute or BIA precedent, the result is that had he been able to appeal, but for the due process violation denying him the right to appeal, the outcome would have been different because the case would have been remanded for further development of the record. The BIA would have looked at this and they would have said, first of all, under matter of MAS, the immigration judge can't condition his grant of voluntary departure on his payment of any bond, much less a $5,000 bond. Second of all, there's no facts supporting why a $5,000 bond. This is an appealable decision. There's no indication on the record of how the immigration judge came up with that amount or whether he evaluated any of the factors that immigration judges typically consider regarding that. And third of all, there's no indication that the immigration judge did what he was required to do under binding BIA precedent, which is to explain to Mr. Vasquez Flores what voluntary departure is and provide him the opportunity to apply for it. I think it's telling in this case, the government refers to how these are, the immigration judge made two separate inquiries, but he made them in a way that put its finger on the scales of the inquiry regarding the voluntary departure. Because properly speaking, he should have asked first, he should have explained to him about voluntary departure, and then said, do you have the means to depart voluntarily? And inquired about how that works and whether he has the means to depart voluntarily, and then he should have inquired about the bond. The departure bond only applies if you're considering someone for voluntary departure. Here he said, you have to pay $5,000. Also, can you depart voluntarily? So the way in which these questions were asked really prejudiced Mr. Vasquez Flores' ability to respond accurately regarding his ability to depart voluntarily. I see my time is up.
Yes, we appreciate your argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you.